Peter McKenna is the chief executive officer at Baylor Scott & White Health, the largest not-for-profit health system in Texas. Through 51 hospitals and more than 1,200 access points, including flagship academic medical centers in Dallas, Fort Worth, and Temple, the system offers the full continuum of care from primary to award-winning specialty care, as well as an array of virtual and in-home services. Previously, McKenna served as Baylor Scott & White's president. Now, in his role as CEO, McKenna is leading the health system's transformation to deliver experiences that go beyond customers' traditional expectations of healthcare. As a guest of our Excellence in Leadership series on The Gary Bisbee Show, Peter McKenna shares invaluable insight concerning the present and future of the healthcare industry. Let's join the conversation.
Good afternoon, Pete, and welcome.
Hi, Gary. Glad to be here.
Well, congratulations. You've just wrapped up your first year as CEO of Baylor Scott & White Health, which kind of brings up the question, how does your first year go compared to the previous 4 years as president? And what have you noticed that might be different about the CEO role than was different as president?
Yeah, no, good question. A couple of things come to mind. One being a really big responsibility to stake out the future and the vision of the organization. You know, a lot of other roles I've been in, the vision's established, had some input into it, obviously, but I'm all in execution mode. How do I achieve the vision? And really the first step in my role was I need to sketch out the future. And then the second observation is the amount of stakeholders and the expansion of the number of stakeholders that I really needed to get to know and to needed to get their perspective. So the job was very, very different in those two aspects.
How would you rate the amount of time you're spending just generally on the stakeholders, getting to know the stakeholders and whatnot? What percentage just off the top of your head would that be of your time?
Wow. I mean, I think it's more normalized now being in the job a little over a year, but I think early on, I think for the first 3 months, it's probably half of my time. And it's not just the board. Our board's about 20 people, but it's key community leaders. And then internally, we have 50,000 employees. We've got 8,000 physicians and other key leaders. And I think going into a new job, particularly if you're an internal promotion, you really need to, in my view, you got to, and it's both important substantively, but also from a perception. So people don't say he's just stuck in the ways he was. He's the same guy and stuck in the ways and beliefs he had before. It's like, no, I want to gather more information and perspectives and really look at this with a fresh point of view and mindset. So that requires talking to people.
So Baylor Scott & White clearly is a successful organization. How do you think as a new CEO about incremental change over time? It's not like this wasn't a really successful place to begin with, but how do you think about incremental change, Pete?
This will sound counterintuitive, but I'm really rejecting the mindset of incremental change. So given the inflection point that I believe we're in healthcare, that large legacy health systems like Baylor Scott & White have got to stake out a future and drive to get there. So it's a new destination rather than taking the legacy business as we did in the past and incrementally improving it all the time, because it's not a stable environment. Our belief is, and my belief is, that really that intersection of consumerism and the technological tools really demand a new destination for healthcare where the customer's in the center and healthcare is more accessible and more navigable. So that's not incremental. That's a new place.
So Pete, as a new CEO and you go meeting with your 50,000 employees and talking to them and then all the stakeholders, is that your basic message, what you talked about in terms of change and timing?
It is. It's acknowledging the strengths of our organization that in the bed, in the clinic, when you're one-on-one with a patient, that's our strength. I'm not being critical of that. I want to embrace that and keep that. But once you get outside those environments, the message is we're not providing adequate service to our customers. One example of that is what business, what service capability in the world issues proudly back orders every day. And that's us. That's us when we make it difficult for you to access the healthcare system. We're saying, I know you want to use us, but we're not available to you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the difficulties in cost in healthcare is due to difficult access, hard to navigate, hard to know where to go.
Pete, your drive for change, given everything that's going on around healthcare, how does that feed back to your selection of your leadership?
One is it really requires really two things. The more as I reflect on it, it does require people who are very experienced in the delivery of healthcare because of its complexity. But yet at the same time, executives that are willing to change, actually curious about the new tools and capabilities and have a mindset of transforming healthcare. They're not protecting the old model, they're embracing a new model, but they have enough experience to know how to integrate the new model into our environment. So finding those executives is really
important. Let's go to succession, if we could, Pete. The transition from your predecessor, Jim Hinton, to you is one of the smoothest on record. How did that process go? Can you just give us a flow of that process and why it was so successful?
I believe there was intentionality by Jim and by our board when I came to the organization, and Jim's willingness to name me president. So as you'll notice in Baylor Scott & White, CEO, and then I was named president. And I think there was an expectation. There wasn't an anointing, don't get me wrong, but I think our board was, and Jim said, we're gonna invest in this guy, and it will position Baylor Scott & White when the day comes where Jim moves on, where we could have an executive within the organization. And I think it sets a, so I really give our board a lot of credit for that. It also sets an example for how we develop people in other levels of the organization, and how, for me, I've got a goal, and there are about 14 people in the senior management team. Each one of them has a goal to develop one or two executives such that they are capable and ready to step into the next role. They're not anointed, because I think if you go too far down that track, it's actually demotivating to people, but that you're taking a couple of capable executives and saying, I'm going to invest in you.
So back to the division between the CEO and president's roles, you've maintained that, which is highly unusual, I would say, for health systems to have that divided role. What's the rationale for that, Pete, with you being the CEO and somebody else being the president?
Yeah, I think there are a couple things that come to mind. One is the recognition of the complexity of large health systems. And that complexity, to be able to move and transform and change at speed, at pace, frankly, is too much for one individual to be sitting at the top. It's really a recognition of that. So that if you have two individuals that complement each other, so if you take Jim and myself, I think we complement each other well and trusted each other. And now in our current environment, myself as CEO and Julie Creamer, we complement each other very well. Julie comes up through a clinical background, and I come up through a financial background, and we trust each other implicitly. You can make the organization move much more quickly, be much more connected to that next layer of management, and also have the benefit of the broader thinking than just one individual.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about Baylor Scott & White Health next. Clearly, Baylor Scott & White Health has multiple regions. I'm sure that each region has a different operating model, different delivery model. How do you think about that, Pete? How do they differ a bit, and how do you incorporate all of that into your overall Baylor Scott & White Health strategy?
Our model is not hub and spoke. Our model is define a market. And that market is defined by our customers and patients, not by us. So where do people seek care? And when you do that, you see the formation. So in our case, for example, Austin is a distinctly different market than the rest of Central Texas.
Yeah.
So Austin's a market. DFW actually, in our view, is three different markets, Fort Worth, Collin County, sort of North Dallas, and Dallas. And then you allow that leadership locally to have their own growth plan, to have their specific things around physician alignment and development, because those dynamics are different. The amount of risk products will be different, and the pathways to growth will be different, and allow them to make decisions within that local market. But yet, on the other hand, when it makes sense, clinical standards, safety protocols, the way we do expense management, some of those things will be standardized through the system. But having enough flexibility locally for those local leaders to make things happen.
So you mentioned the importance of the consumer a bit ago. How do you think about becoming more consumer-centric, if I could use that term?
Yeah, I think, you know, the first thing question we asked is, let's not look to other healthcare entities to answer that question. Let's go outside of healthcare and look at businesses that are B2C fundamentally. Because healthcare, again, other than if you're in our clinic or hospital bed, we're not B2C. We're B2B. Yep. We deal with payers and so on and so forth. So when you look at B2C businesses, what we're learning, and our view changes all the time as we learn more, they have massive investment in understanding what the customer wants and what they need. And for us, the other thing we learned as part of that investment is B2C businesses spend a whole lot of time defining in detail the various customer journeys in their receipt and seeking services, and understand in that journey where are the moments that matter and where are the pain points. So we're on that journey to really learn and understand the customer. And what we've learned early in this journey is that some of the customer's requirements, if we did it the old way, we would overcomplicate it. And what we're learning is some of their requirements are just very simple. And we need to listen to the customer and then deploy and implement those solutions to those pain points. And we really believe if we do that well, we're going to differentiate ourselves. And if we differentiate ourselves, our customers are going to be more loyal to us. So that's really at the heart of it.
How does that model, how is it affected by expenditures for inpatient versus outpatient care going forward? Does that suggest that you need to increase your commitment to outpatient care?
Yeah, I think maybe more broadly, not necessarily just outpatient care, but things outside the hospital, be it either delivery environments like the home or virtual, but also supports, as I mentioned earlier, supports around navigation, investment around navigation, investment in analytics, where we're personalizing to you, investment in new products and services like chronic care. Generally, a lot of those investments will be out there while maintaining that inpatient excellence. The interesting part for us, given the markets we're in, big part of our capital investment still is inpatient facilities and enhancing those given the growth we have in our market, but a little bit of both, but really outside, different channels outside the hospital, definitely.
Do you think that one of the kind of effects of the pandemic is that the health systems will take more public health responsibility going forward, or was that just a one-time situation?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is yes. I think what we saw in the pandemic and what we begin to see in our health equity, that we exist in certain communities where there are big gaps in care for different specific populations. And I would call that a public health problem, really. And I think we need to find where can we uniquely assist or solve some of those gaps. So the answer, long answer to your question, but the answer is yes. I think we have an obligation to do that. Our mission drives us to do that as a Christian ministry of healing at Baylor Scott & White, that we're looking for that injustice, let's just call it, in terms of health equity, and saying, what can we do to narrow that gap?
Let's talk about consolidation for a moment. Most of the large health systems have been consolidating over the last 30 plus years. Baylor Scott & White has participated in that as well. What do you see going forward, Pete, either vertical or horizontal validation for Baylor Scott & White?
I think if you believe we are in this inflection point, that the fourth industrial revolution, whatever you want to call it, is coming to healthcare, and healthcare needs to modernize around data-driven platforms, personalized platforms, you have to talk about consolidation, because the new business model is based upon scalable platforms. It's investing in the ability to take something and then sell and distribute it to a wide population. Who builds that and says, I got to stop at the Texas border, right? I got to stop at the Illinois border.
Yep.
Many of the things that are being built in products and services have application nationally, if not globally. So I think you'll see partnerships and collaborations come together as that happens.
Pete, you mentioned chronic disease and a growth of chronic disease earlier. Let me follow up on that if I could. What comes along with increased chronic disease is increased federal dollars for all intents and purposes as the population ages. So how do you think a growing number of federal dollars and patients with chronic disease will affect Baylor Scott & White's strategy over time?
The management of chronic disease is something that's fundamentally broken in the U.S. healthcare system. And I think it's broken because the U.S. healthcare system, as we've talked on previous occasions, is driven by incentives of the fee-for-service model. And chronic disease really requires a partnership between the provider and the person with chronic disease. And the management of chronic disease needs to be easy. A diabetic managing their chronic disease is a daily routine. And it's as fundamental as to the foods that they eat and the medications that they take on a daily and sometimes hourly basis. Mm-hmm. And that, we've got to make that easy. And if we make it easy and accessible and affordable, chronic disease management and the participation of the patient in that will go up. And if that goes up, we'll have better health. So chronic disease management actually lends itself better to in a risk environment, where the government money, getting back to your question, really comes and it's more in an at-risk environment where everybody wins if the individual becomes healthier.
Yeah, for sure on that. Pete, how do you think about the large cap companies, the Walgreens, CVS's, Optums, Walmarts, and now Amazon? How do you think about them elbowing their way into primary care fundamentally, and how will that affect Baylor Scott & White's strategy, do you think?
I really believe that this disruption will eventually coalesce into a partnership that health systems have with organizations like that. That patients don't want all this fragmentation, that those health systems that are able to develop really an accessible, navigable ecosystem that provide you all the products and services you want, where and when you want it, are going to be the winners, and the winners and the customers are going to want those. So I think as much as we see some of these disruptors as competitors, we have to be mindful in the short term. In the long term, our orientation is how can we evaluate all these companies, both large and small, and develop a partnership with what we believe are the winners? And if we can do that, we'll ultimately provide our customers what they want and need.
That's a nuanced view that I think is the right one, Pete. No question. This has been a great interview. We really appreciate your time. I've got one last question, if I could. For those in our audience who might be up-and-coming leaders, healthcare leaders, what advice would you have for them, Pete?
I interviewed someone the other day who was coming right out of graduate school. Let's just take someone like that and say, what's the most important thing in your mind for me in my career at this point in time? And I told them is most important thing is to have a great supervisor. So don't worry about the flash of the title or even of the money. If you got a great boss earlier in your career, it'll stick with you all the way. I remember my first boss, a guy by the name of Dave Kennel. He was fabulous, and I learned so much. I apply it today to what I do. So that's number one, is seek out great people to work with. That's probably the biggest one. And the other is be open to grow, be open to move laterally and build out your repertoire of skill and knowledge. Don't think of it as a linear journey to the C-suite. Move around, learn a lot from a lot of different things. And the executive of the future is going to need to be very diverse in their thinking, very diverse in their skill set in order to be effective.
Well, that's great advice. And I must say that those that have the opportunity to work with you, Pete, are going to be very lucky.
I hope so. I hope I can attract the best ones. So
I'm sure you are. Thank you, Pete. Much appreciated.
All right, Gary. Thank you.